It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, author Anne Lamott joins the show for a look at the ways we can find hope in the face of fear. First, lawmakers in both parties are pushing a bill in the state legislature that would make people with criminal backgrounds, more of them, eligible for expungement, effectively removing their criminal records from public records. Right now, if you have a non-violent low-level offense on your record, you can petition to have that removed. Judges can only grant expungements at the time of sentencing, and the offender has to be younger than 25. Under this new plan, expungements can be considered after the full sentence has been served, and it's available to people regardless of age. A similar bill passed the Assembly in the last session. It was not taken up, though, in the Senate. Supporters of the change say it'll help those with criminal records find a job and address Wisconsin's worker shortage. The plan does have some critics, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support or oppose this effort to expand expungement eligibility? Do you or someone you know have a criminal record that makes it hard to find work? How worried are you about someone's criminal history disappearing potentially from public records? What questions do you have about how all this works? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Julie Grace is a policy analyst in the Badger Institute's Center for Opportunity. She's going to be moderating a virtual discussion on this topic on March 24th. Julie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And Chanyelle McLeod is executive director of Clean Slate Milwaukee. She'll be participating in that Badger Institute discussion. Chanyelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invite.
And Chanyelle, let's start with you. What do you see as the problems with our current policy on expungement in Wisconsin?
Well, the first thing I want to say is when someone hears the word criminal, right, their mind goes straight to the most heinous, the harshest, you know, felonious. And by definition, we're talking murderers and rapists. And this is not who we're talking about. We're talking about low-level drug offenders. And we're talking about people that have made low-level, you know, crimes, you know, committed crimes from back in the day. We're talking about people that still hinder from their records from the 70s, the 80s, and 90s. They have not done anything since. And in my opinion, they're not criminals. So if we can not use the word criminal and just refer to them as people, that'd be great. So that's the main thing. You know, the biggest thing with this has been the attitudes of people throughout the state, you know, thinking that people, just because they've been arrested or even convicted, you know, they don't deserve, you know, a right, the same rights as everyone else, when that's not fair. That's not true. And we're holding back a lot of great talent, people that are educated, even people that have master's degrees. They're not able to find opportunities because something that they probably did 10 years ago as a young adult.
And Julie, part of what the Badger Institute is looking at here is this is an untapped economic opportunity. If we could free up some of the people that Chanyelle was talking about to make it back successfully into the workforce, can you talk about the impact you see that having?
Certainly. So, yeah, like you said, we see this as a workforce and economic issue. And our interest in this issue actually started back in 2017. We did some research on how expungements are being used in the state, who is receiving them, what age are they receiving them at, what crimes are they receiving them for. And what we found was that while the law might be followed as it's written now, the disparities are quite troubling based on county and based on race. And I can get into those disparities later in this conversation. But yeah, you're right. We believe that this is truly an untapped pool of talent that Wisconsin can utilize. Like Chanyelle said, we are talking about people who have committed low-level, non-violent offenses, mostly misdemeanors. And as the bill is written, you can only receive one expungement and you cannot have any past felony convictions. And so these are the type of people that we want working, we want engaged in our workforce, and we want to be you know, productive members of society.
Chanyelle, can you talk about the impact on someone's life if, and again, the people we're talking about here is someone who was convicted of a misdemeanor, maybe early in life, late teen years, early 20s. What does it mean for them to have that hanging on their record every time they apply for a job or an apartment or anything like that?
It means a whole new life. You know, I can tell you the story of a young man that we met at an event called the Homeless Connect back in 2018. And he had a marijuana conviction, busted at a college party, and he was arrested and conviction of possession of marijuana that kept him from going to school, going to college. And so he actually fell into a depression. And after getting his record expunged, you know, we actually wrote a story about him because he was he's now a sheriff deputy here in Milwaukee County. And the story was called Homeless to Homeless to Homeowner. You know, he's a father now, he's a homeowner, he has a career. He would never, you know, go back to the life he had before. I can tell you about a young guy I met at a job fair, and he was, you know, also had a marijuana felony. And after getting his record expunged, you know, he now works at St. Joseph's Hospital. He works at Usinger Sausage. He's going back to school for medicine. And it's transformational. It's absolutely, I've been firsthand witness to the transformations in people's lives. They're a whole new people. They're a whole new person. Their confidence levels rises. Their self-esteem rises. Their economic opportunity rises. There are contributors to not just the community, but their families. And so now we're talking about putting families back together and less dependency on the government. And I mean, that's what we all want, right? So we actually made a film called The Expungement Experiment to highlight the before and after differences of a person's life once you remove that restriction. And what becomes of a person once they no longer have that felony on their records.
We're talking about efforts to change Wisconsin's expungement process. That's the way that your criminal record can be taken off of your public record for, the change would say, for a lower level nonviolent offenses. We have Chanyelle McLeod with us from Clean Slate Milwaukee and Julie Grace with the Badger Institute's Center for Opportunity. Julie, you mentioned racial disparities and how this shakes out and affects people's lives around the state. Can you share some of that information with us?
Sure. So like I said, when we looked into this issue back in 2017, what we did is we looked at all cases filed from 2010 through April 2017. That included 10,000 expunged cases. Of those, about 7,300 were dismissed. And so we looked at 13,000 total convictions. And we looked at expungements, like I said, by race, by county, and by crime. And what we found were that compared to the percentage of eligible crimes by race, Black people, especially in Milwaukee County, were receiving fewer than the eligible crimes were. So let me just give an example that might help. In Milwaukee County, over the period that we looked at, the Blacks made up 69% of eligible crimes. However, they only received 54% of expungements. And I could go through other counties as well. But I think that illustrates the picture pretty well. And so that's troubling, you know, and we don't speculate why that happens, you know, whether it's due to representation issues or a lack of knowledge on how to receive an expungement. But we do think that shifting the decision point from the time of sentencing, as it currently is now, which is unlike any other law in the nation, to after a sentence has been served, will only give judges more information as to whether someone has earned an expungement or not, and hopefully provide more people with the opportunity to receive one.
We're talking about a bill in the state legislature that would increase expungement eligibility for people convicted of certain nonviolent crimes here in Wisconsin. Chanyelle McLeod is with us, executive director of Clean Slate Milwaukee. Julie Grace is a policy analyst at the Badger Institute. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see this proposal become law or not? Have you yourself had trouble finding work because of a past criminal record? If you're an employer, how hard has it been for you to fill job openings? Or do you want this information? Do you have experience with the expungement process yourself, either with your own record, to someone in your family, or maybe an employee? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation about expungement law in Wisconsin. Right now, you can petition to have your record cleared of nonviolent, low-level offenses. Has to be granted at the time of sentencing, and you got to be younger than 25. A new bill would let judges consider expungement after a full sentence is served and regardless of age. Chanyelle McLeod stays with us, Executive Director of Clean Slate Milwaukee, and Julie Grace from the Badger Institute. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. John is with us in Green Bay. John, hi.
How you doing? I just wanted to say I think expungement is very important. I went from I had caught a case when I was a juvenile in Michigan, and it followed me my whole life. It expunged. I had to move out of state, find a whole other job somewhere else that they would hire me. Now I'm a truck driver. I got a family. I got a house. I don't think low-level offenses should be holding people back for opportunity for the rest of their life.
Amen.
John, thanks a lot for sharing your story. Glad things have worked out well for you. Chanyelle, another story you could share, like the ones you were talking about earlier.
Yes, it happens more often than we know, and it's not just an African-American thing. I promise you, you know, the Hmong community, the Latino community, our Caucasian community, like, it's a Wisconsin thing. It's not a race thing. It's more of a poverty thing because people don't have access, but I promise you the story is more common than you think.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Dee now in Madison. Dee, hello.
Hello there.
What did you want to tell us about? Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say that I also caught myself a case. And during the trial process, I learned that there were two other instances in Wisconsin of the same case or the same charges, sometimes more egregious. Those two were bumped down to misdemeanors, whereas mine wasn't. I'm a black male. But I've been doing everything in my power to turn my life around, contributing to the community, getting myself a job, going through programs, therapy, the whole nine yards, trying to reinvent myself and pay for the mistake that I made. And so every time I try to look for a job or some new employment, it always just bites me. And I think, isn't it possible for somebody to look at my situation and say, look, this guy made a mistake. We're all human beings, the nonviolent mistake, but can we give him a second chance?
Dee, yes. Thanks a lot for that call. Mm-hmm. And Julie, again, Dee says this is kind of hanging over his head as he applies for a new job still.
Yeah, exactly. And we hear, unfortunately, many, many stories like that. I'll also say this, when people have quality, steady employment, when they have a family supporting job, they're also very less likely to commit another crime and end up back in the prison system. And so when we hear all these statistics about, I think it's about 30% of people who leave the state prison system end up back there, a job is really the way out. And so an expungement is a way to get a job. And therefore, I think expungements really promote public safety in that way. But that's great to hear stories of people who are really turning their lives around and who are working and supporting their families. And that's great to hear.
Thanks for that call. Before we go back to our callers, I want to mention a couple of objections that have been out there. One, the Wisconsin mm-hmm. Freedom of Information Council says it's bad that this hurts people in this way, but it is a public record of something that happened in Wisconsin government. The public and employers, for that matter, have the right to know about the past of people, even if it's not always pretty. Chanyelle, what would you say to that concern?
I would say a lot of people are abusing that information in ways that it harms people. And the employers themselves sometimes break the law. You can't hold people accountable for maybe one time making a mistake, And then, you know, not, and then turn a blind eye when an employer or a landlord or a property management or even a university uses that information against that person. Even on CCAP, it says you're not allowed to use the information against this person unless the applicant, the position is substantially related, you know, and they don't. You check that box, you check yourself out. So there needs to be a conversation had with the, you know, information. Also taking consideration, those records are not fair to everybody. It's a disparity amongst, you know, geographics, you know, and they can't deny that discrimination is historical, you know, deprivation in communities and, you know, segregation. That stuff is historical. Where this is not anything new. You know, it used to be okay to say you can't rent here or you can't apply here because you were Black. They can't say those things anymore. They can say you can't apply here because you're a felon. They can say you can't rent here or you can't live on this side of town because you're a felon. That is legal. So what we're addressing is legal discrimination, unchecked discrimination. That's actually historical. That's not nothing new. Milwaukee itself has always had a housing discrimination issue and still does.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Waukesha. John, hi.
Yes. Hello. Yes. I'm calling about what the word expungement means. My son, 30 years ago, went to Walmart and used a credit card that was not his, and he was apprehended. It's the first time anything ever happened to him. And he had 1 year of probation, and he got an order from the judge, and I have a copy of it here, that after 1 year, his record would be expunged. I checked into that. I go online for the last 30 years, called Madison, and they said, that's true, you got an order of expungement, but it's still open to public record. I thought when he got expunged that you were freed. Evidently, right. That does not mean your record's clean.
John, thanks for the call. Julie, is that how it's supposed to work?
So I believe if you are granted an expungement, it should not be public record. It still is accessible through the DOJ, and you know the crime still occurred, so therefore there has to be some record. But it's not publicly accessible, I guess. I'm not sure about that particular instance. But if I could just say one point about the information, if that's okay, this bill does not change what crimes are eligible for an expungement in Wisconsin. And so right now people are getting expungements for misdemeanors and for H and I felonies, and this bill doesn't change that. And I also just wanted to note that the practice of expungement is not unique to Wisconsin. Many, many, most states, I believe, have some type of expungement law. And we've seen in recent years, actually, more and more states are expanding their laws, allowing for multiple crimes to be expunged or allowing for automatic expungements of certain crimes. Michigan signed an expansive package last year. This bill does not do any of that. Really, all this bill does is change the decision-making from, like we've said, the time of sentencing until after a sentence has been served, and then eliminates the age restriction. So I just wanted to add that in there real quick as well.
Sure. John, thanks for the call. We'll go to Dave next in Toma. Dave, hi. Oh, looks like we lost Dave. Dave wanted to say, our producer says expungement should be on a case-by-case basis. He was in the situation a while back, couldn't get it removed, Dave says. And Greg in Menominee called in to say he has a felony on his record for passing bad checks in 1996, wondering how this proposal might help him. I don't know. Chanyelle, would it go back that far? I don't know where that would fit in. But I guess that age, changing that age restriction, it might help someone like Greg.
Yes. And it will do three things. As Julie just noted, it will remove at the time of sentencing. It will remove the age limit, but it also will make it retroactive so that people who have records from the 70s, even the 80s, the, you know, 90s, like he has one from 96, depending on his level, if it's class of H or I, yes, he would then be eligible to have that record expunged then.
All right. Thanks to both of them for calling. Again, they couldn't stay on the line. Chanyelle, are there other changes that you would like to see? As Julie was just mentioning, some states have gone further on expungement than this proposed law would. Are there other changes you'd like to see?
Oh, my God. We are so far behind. We are so far behind. Our neighboring states, Illinois and Michigan, even Indiana, is showing us up, you know. So one of the changes I would like to see is an expungement across the board. The way it goes right now is you can have something expunged from the Wisconsin Circuit Court access, but you cannot have it expunged from the DOJ, Crime Information Bureau. And I can promise you that it's records on the DOJ that you've never been convicted of that should be expunged. I think it should be automatic expungement of dismissed cases and cases that were never prosecuted. I feel like when there's an expungement from one database, it should be expungement from another database. Also, I will also like to see expungement and pardons go hand in hand. Right now, our governor has reopened up the Pardon Advisory Board, but as it stands, you can have that, you can get your rights back, but the information is still visible. So it's kind of backwards where you got all your rights back to your, you know, and you're not a felon, but everything is still visible to the public eye, regardless of the age of it. And that's just not smart.
And Julie, in our last minute or so, this bill is more modest than what Chanyelle was just talking about there. Do you see enough bipartisan support for it to get it through both chambers of the legislature this time around?
I do. And this bill has widespread bipartisan support. Like you mentioned at the beginning of this, it passed the assembly last session. It was never taken up in the Senate. We are hopeful that this session, it is able to be made into law. And we have a wide bipartisan coalition behind this bill as well, from groups like ourselves to the ACLU, Americans for Prosperity. The list goes on. And there's also public support for this bill or for this practice as well. Marquette Law School included in a 2019 poll a question asking if people would support allowing offenders to petition judges to expunge their record after the sentences are complete in nonviolent low-level cases, and 65% of respondents did support it. So yes, we are hopeful that this time around it will become law, largely due to a lot of groups and bipartisan work on both sides of the aisle.
We'll leave it there. Julie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Chanyelle, thanks for being with us.
Oh my God, thank you guys as well. It was a joy.
Julie Grace is a policy analyst at the Badger Institute's Center for Opportunity, and Chanyelle McLeod is executive director of Clean Slate Milwaukee. We talked to them about a bill in the state legislature that would broaden eligibility for criminal record expungement. They'll be part of a Badger Institute event on the topic on March 24th. You can find details at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up, bestselling author Anne Lamott joins us to talk about her latest book on finding hope in dark times. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent welcomes two experts on COVID-19 vaccines for a look at the latest priority list here in Wisconsin and the impact of the newly approved Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, when we're in the middle of something really difficult, whether it's life during a pandemic, a rough patch in a marriage, or the struggle with an addiction, it can be hard to keep up hope and remember that good moments, good times are still possible. Anne Lamott has written many books on how to find meaning and hope in difficult times. In her new book, she says, when times are tough, love can be the path to hope. Quoting here, hope springs from realizing we are loved, can love, and are loved with skin on. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you found hope and courage when going through something difficult, either in the last year or throughout your life? Do you have ways to spread kindness when things are hard? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Anne Lamott is a novelist and nonfiction writer. She's also an activist, public speaker, and writing teacher. Her latest book is called Dusk, Night, Dawn, on revival and courage. Anne, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I love this station so much.
Oh, thank you. Well, this is a perfect book for this time. Did you know going into this book we were going to be dealing with this horrific pandemic that really had us thinking about hope and revival?
Well, I didn't know about COVID, but I was on book tour for the last book, whose subtitle was Thoughts on Hope. I'd actually originally called it Doomed, Thoughts on Hope, but my publisher wouldn't go for it. But so anyway, I was traveling around the country, and everywhere I went, people felt so defeated and really kind of freaked out and grief-struck about what was happening in our country. And, you know, then the fires in Australia. I mean, an entire continent was on fire. And then I live in California, and our state caught fire, apparently because we didn't rake the forest efficiently enough. And then we were told. And everywhere I went, people just said, where do we even start to get our mojo back? What will our kids be wearing gas masks? This is also after the UN climate change reports that came out, and it was just all devastating. And so I sat down to try to answer that question of where do we start and what works and why bother?
Well, here's a quote talking about where we start. You write, we start in the here and now. And you talk about that in the scope of these huge global problems and in your own struggles in your daily life. It sounds maybe easier said than done. How do we look around us and start in the here and now to deal with something that seems overwhelming?
Well, you accept and understand that it's really hard. It's going to be hard to turn around climate change. It's hard to help a young person who's scaring you to death find their way back to a healthy path or whatever. But we're good at heart, and we're really good at heart. We've stopped fascism a couple times. We invented the antiretrovirals. We stopped smallpox. And so you start where you are. You think like for me, if I don't know what to do on any given day to get my confidence and hope back, I send money to a food pantry, or I drive to Safeway and I fill up two bags full of canned goods and powdered goods and candy, and I drive it over to the food bank in the Canal District here, which is where all the service workers for the county live, where the rate of COVID is astronomical. And you do that. You do anonymous things that help other people have hope, and then you've provided a little bit of hope for the day. You call your most annoying relative and you say, I was just thinking of you. How are you? You know, you take the action, in other words, and then the insight follows. The insight is that we, you know, Mother Teresa, may she rest in peace, said, no one can do great things, but everyone can do small things with great love. So you do a few things that are loving, you even do nice loving things for yourself, for cranky old crunchy neurotic judgmental you. You get yourself a lovely cup of tea, you take the dog for a 3-block walk, you get outside, you look up, you breathe, you wave to neighbors from across the street 6 feet away in masks, and you know, you do whatever you can to help wherever you can one day at a time.
And you talk about yourself as trying to live up to that ideal of giving to others, but also as the recipient. You have sometimes depended on the kindness of strangers, including a woman, I think, from Texas, who played a huge role in your path to sobriety. Can you talk about what one stranger did for you?
Yes. Well, this is 35 years ago almost when I got sober. But, you know, William Blake, the great poet, said, we're here to learn to endure the beams of love. And I just live by that because it's just so awful. And I'm so good at taking care of everyone else. I was raised to be a little flight attendant in my family. My parents had an unhappy marriage, and I had two brothers. And I had a little clipboard, I think, and a caseload of trying to give and save and rescue and fix them all. So to receive something like to receive so much love has taken a lot of practice. But I was in Florida. I was speaking at a national book event. I'd been sober about a year, so this would have been 1987. And I just lost it one night. I was really high up in a hotel. I was scared to death. I had a mini fridge filled with bottles of booze. And it was about midnight. And I was just so doomed. And I looked up a resource line for alcoholics It was a 24-hour thing. And this guy, this young man, he's probably like 12, said, "Okay, Miss Lamont, we're going to send some over to talk to you." It was midnight. And I said, "You're going to send someone over to talk to me?" And they did, and they sent an elderly woman from Texas who arrived, as I discovered later, in a bright pink Cadillac. And she had the big hair, like Ann Richards always say, the higher the hair, the closer to God. And she came into this hotel room, and she stayed with me for like a couple hours, hour and a half. We shared stories. We shared our experience, strength, and hope. We made each other laugh about what crazy lushes we were. And I've always said laughter is carbonated holiness, you know. But Trevor Noah, who I love, said something better last week. He said, when you laugh with someone, you know you're really sharing something. And with the woman from Texas, I didn't know her from Adam's house cat. You know, we probably had nothing in common, not our politics, not our faith, not our anything. And we just sat and talked and laughed. And then she pulled down, you know, she got a bottle of water for me and put it by my bed and tucked, you know, pulled the sheets down and kind of commanded me to get into bed and try to rest. And I was fine.
We're talking to Anne Lamott about her new book, Dusk, Night, Dawn, on Revival and Courage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you find hope in difficult times on the planet, in your own life? Call in at 800-642-1234. And you end the main body of the book with it's like a hymn to love and the power of love, I think. And one line, I'm going to spoil it, I hope that's okay with you, that really stuck out to me. Love reveals the beauty of sketchy people like us to ourselves. And there's a lot there about, I don't know, the grace we can offer ourselves for our failings and offer to others. Could you talk about that a little?
Yeah, it's my favorite topic, really, because we try to be people of love and forgiveness, but we've got to start with the most disappointing and annoying person we know, which is us. You know, otherwise we are just coming from a place of depletion and, you know, just clench and clutch. But if I can start off by doing something really, well, let me say rather, I see intimacy as meaning into me I see. And it's past the surface, it's past the performance, it's past the performance art of having a public life, and it's into the parts of me that are deepest and most true. And I'm not hiding stuff that is adorable and beautiful and touching. You know, I'm suppressing stuff that's materialistic and petty and annoyed and judgmental. And so to go do the deep dive and to start to be forgiving towards myself, because I'm that way, I'm a very mixed grill of characteristics, then little by little I can start doing it with other people. I can start forgiving. I can start seeing beyond the enormous mistakes my parents made raising the three of us into how wounded and isolated and anxious they felt, how sad and how unloved they had really felt as children, and how, you know, they probably should have raised orchids or teacup poodles instead of children, but there we were. And I looked past everything they did that really hurt us to these really touching people who met and fell in love and did what they were told to do. They had children and they did the best they could, and it wasn't great. But, you know, the great theologian C.S. Lewis said something 50 or 60 years ago. He said, when you decide to become a person of forgiveness, maybe you don't stop with the Gestapo. You don't start with the Gestapo. You know, you start with your Aunt Blanche and the very odd thing she says at every holiday table that are really hurtful. And you start with her and you realize how lonely she is and how she was raised this way. She's channeling her mother, you know, and you start to go a little bit easy on her. So that for me, love is it's both complex and simple, because people are tough, people are hard, people are damaged and ruined, and I am too, and I'm making a comeback, and other people are trying to too. And you know, some days go better than others. Some days are just too hard. Sometimes I have to call a best friend. This is always a solution, and say, I hate everyone and all of life. And then that friend will say, oh, I'm so glad you called. I do too. Let's go to Target, you know, and then you're back in the saddle.
We're talking to author Anne Lamott. Her new book is called Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. You can join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Do you have ways of finding hope in days, even when days aren't looking so good, even in a tough time like a pandemic, for example? Do you have ways that you reach out and try to help other people? Do you find it easy to forgive people? Or is it harder some days than others and for some people than others? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk with writer Anne Lamott. She's known for writing openly about a lot of big real-life issues like motherhood, alcoholism, faith. She has a new book out called Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got John with us in Mauston. John, hello. Oop, I think John's on a different line. John, are you there? We'll try to get John in just a sec. And you write about being in what you call the last third of your life. And things didn't magically improve in all ways. We're still people at that age. But you write that it gives you some perspective on the tough times and how long they're going to last. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I actually wanted to call this book The Third Third because I'll be 67 next month. But you know, what I experienced, I think at around 50, was that I noticed how much crud I was carrying around from place to place that I had been carrying around for 50 years. You know, like at 50, I called the public library in San Francisco and I said, send a van. And I gave them 300 books that I had been moving from place to place over the years. Most of them were from college that I attended briefly. And they were books that I kept on the shelf so that people would think I'm smarter and more educated and erudite than I am. And at 50, I thought, how much longer are you going to do this? Because all that stuff keeps us flying way too low. I mean, skimming the treetops. And I thought, I just really want to soar. And so I got rid of books. There were a few people I let go of gently because I had been agreeing to be with them for many years, although they were damaging to me or they made me feel shame or just small. And I very gently wiggled free, let's say, and maybe talked to them every few years instead of two or three times a year. I started to really prune and lighten the load, and that's made a huge difference in my life. But, you know, I have a great friend, Terry Ritchie, who's a Diocesan priest in Los Angeles, and he said something so brilliant. He said, we don't get over much here. And if I think about it, I'm very, very similar to the way I was at, like, 7, you know? I'm very sensitive. People get to me much, much less than they do because I just write them off. Or, you know, you just realize people get to think what they think and you're not going to change them. But we don't get over much here. And so I do think I'm wiser. I do think my life makes a lot more sense because I say, you know why? Because I say no a lot more. And I think I was probably in my mid-50s when I discovered no is a complete sentence. And so that sort of frees me up to say yes with enthusiasm to the stuff that I really want to do or that I think may make a difference for a number of people. So does that answer your question?
Oh, it does. I think we've got our phone line sorted now. So let's try John in Mauston for real now. John, hi.
Hello.
Hi. What do you want to tell us about John?
Well, I was just saying that as a disabled Vietnam veteran from the 60s all the way to the 70s, the first thing I say when I come outside and sit in the sun is I say, thank you, Lord, for this day. Then I say a warrior's prayer to give hope to the POWs, closure to those loving families of MIAs, and protecting our troops both here and abroad, especially the first responders that are everywhere. Then I go on and I say a Hail Mary, and ask her for intercession with the Lord Jesus Christ, my Savior, to watch over the women, all those abused, the sick, the lame, And I ended up, especially for the young girls, that are innocent women that are being trafficked by, I just call them evildoers. I'm not going to put a name on them because everybody knows who they are.
John, thanks a lot for calling in. And I hear there and gratitude, appreciation of nature, faith and compassion and concern for others. Sounds like a pretty good recipe.
Yeah, and it's also about waking up every morning instead of hitting the snooze button again and again and getting yourself outside and looking up and around you and letting yourself be blown away all over again. My old pastor used to have this great sermon based on how you can keep bees at the bottom of a mason jar with no lid on because they just walk around bumping into the glass kind of bitterly. I guess they have their arms crossed. And all they have to do is to look up, and then they can fly away. So when people call and they're depressed or lost, I just say, go outside, look up, look up, look up. And you don't look up and go, oh, it's a medium full moon tonight. You know, you look up and you go, oh, my God. And it spritzes you back awake. And so we do that over and over again all day if we remember to.
John, thanks for the call. We'll go to Tara now,
John,
in Lake Delta. And Tara, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know a little coping mechanism I've learned over time. I suffer from depression myself, and I liked watched lots of good movies with happy endings, and I write lots of cards to people to encourage them, especially during this pandemic time. But most of all, I wanted to let people know about this little thing I kind of fell upon, that I've been doing staycations at home, just going to other countries, studying about them, learning about the language, and watching like classic movies. Lately, I've been going to India, and I've been watching classic. I've been watching classic movies that have to do with India. You know, ones that are more low key movies during this stressful time. I mean, my parents are elderly; they have difficulties right now, a very serious illness. And I'm just like, I throw my arms up in the air, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to India.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea.
I love it. Tara, thanks. Best to you and your folks, too. Yeah. Anne, what do you think?
I think it's an amazing idea, but also I love that she writes cards to people to encourage them. And always, if you want to have loving feelings yourself, you do loving things for other people. You know, you call your lonely and very annoying uncle, and you just check in with him. And, I mean, to write cards to people is just so wonderful because then they can hold on to it, and especially if it has a really pretty picture on it. But it was nice talking to her.
Tara, thanks. And our last minute, Anne, you know, we've had this pandemic for a year plus now. I've heard from callers. They're feeling, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, but they're feeling really drained and down right now. Thoughts for them in our last minute on how to keep it up for another little longer.
Well, it's hard, and I think you have to give yourself credit for what we've done together, what we've come through, and just like pat yourself nicely on the shoulder like you would anybody else. And we're good at hard, and we just keep taking – for me, I just keep trying to help the poor. I keep it very simple. I really love the food pantries and those pictures of the mile-long lines to get a box of food for your family are heartbreaking. And so I send everyone I hear about some money, and I go over to the one in San Rafael, and I just keep it really simple. I really don't think that figure it out is a very good slogan for life. And so I just take the action, and then the insight follows, which is that, I just try to keep the patient comfortable. We've come through a lot. There's been a really deep, deep sense of gratitude for the people of service. You know, Mr. Rogers' mother always said that great thing to him when there was a tragedy or a crisis. She said, look to the helpers. And so I make myself be aware all the time of these incredible first responders, EMTs, and the nurses. Oh, my God. And that just fills me with humility and gratitude and just kind of can help me hit the reset button, that this has been so hard and it's been astonishing.
Anne, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love this.
That's Anne Lamott. Her new book is called Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Governor Evers released his budget plan, but it looks like state lawmakers will start from scratch with their own ideas. We'll look at the policies and politics of the state budget. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday with great recipes for breakfast foods. Let's face it, you can eat them anytime you want to. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Earlier this week, we got some advice from a librarian on rebuilding a reading habit. A lot of people, it turns out, found their reading routines shaken by the pandemic and found it tougher to focus in on a book. Our guest shared some recommendations, and you did too, and we heard from some more of you over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, mainly stories about people who are still reading a lot. Maybe they can help inspire you. Kara writes, I actually have become a much better reader during the pandemic because I've given myself permission to read. In the past, I felt like I had to go, 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 and now I'm okay if I spend 4 hours reading on a weekend day. Good advice. Tanya says, I've been a voracious reader since I learned to read, and in the last 5 years, I've switched all my book reading to audiobooks through the Libby app, where I get books through my library. I do that too. I get my news, Tanya writes, through reading on my phone and fall asleep almost every night listening to an audiobook. I love having the ability to lose myself in a book while cooking or doing other mundane tasks. My audio landscape is nonstop. It's either NPR or a book. And Crystal says, a day without reading is like, never mind, I have no idea what that would be like. You can keep sharing your reading stories and maybe your book recommendations. You can do that on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.